You are tuned to CICK News on 93.9 FM in Smithers. CICK News is your news source for regional and provincial news Tuesdays and Thursdays at 8 a.m., 2 p.m., and 4 p.m. It's hosted by Dan Messick and myself, Pamela Hassan. Find and follow CICK News online at smithersradio.com and frequencynews.ca or wherever you get your podcasts. CICK News is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Government of Canada.
Today on CICK News, almost a month ago, after more than 50 years under the Assad regime, Syrian dictator Bashar al-Assad fled the country for Moscow after several rebel groups united to bring down the brutal government that has been clinging to power for the past decade following years of bloodshed. In 2015, Canada started receiving refugees from Syria who were able to find their way to Europe and then onto North America. Several Syrian families relocated here to northern BC with the help of independent citizen groups and organizations. One family that eventually made it here to Smithers was Suher and Orwa, along with their two daughters, with the hopes of building a better life halfway around the world. Earlier this month, when they heard the news that the Assad regime had finally fallen, it was cause for celebration. Today, we reconnect with Orwa and Suher, as well as Suher's brother, Tamam, visiting from northern Saskatchewan, where he resettled, to chat about how and why they came to Canada and what their hopes are for their rapidly changing homeland, Syria.
My name is Suher. I'm from southern Syria, from a city named Sweda. We are so happy to meet you, and thank you so much for your attention about our story in Syria.
My name is Orwa. I'm from Syria, and now we live in Smithers, BC. We have been here for 7 years now. Yeah, we came as a refugees in 2017, December, in Prince George, and then we moved here like about maybe 4 years ago. We moved to Smithers, for work and these things.
In Syria, Sweda is a small city near Jordan's northern border. It's about an hour and a half south of Damascus, the capital of Syria. And to understand the geography of the region, Sweda is about a four-hour drive from Tel Aviv in Israel. Go another hour down the road and you hit the Gaza Strip. Needless to say, the region has been plagued by conflict for decades, if not centuries. For civilians, it can obviously be a struggle to survive, and that's why in 2017, Suher and Orwa made the decision to leave their homeland in search of a better future for their two daughters and themselves. I had a chance to sit down with them in their home here in Smithers.
Maybe first, tell me a little about where you lived in Syria. What was life like in Syria?
I was a teacher, math teacher actually, for high school. And we live in kind of an apartment, my wife and me and two daughters. I was working as a teacher, like in Syria you work for the government, like most of the jobs, if you are employment, so it's gonna be for the government. Everything for the government almost. Some like special thing or not for the government. Yeah, it's kind of different system, different regime.
Obviously recently, you know, we've seen a lot of upheaval in Syria, right? The Assad regime is done. He's fled. And I'm curious to know, you left Syria because of the civil war and you came halfway around the world, you know, to be safe. And I'm curious to know, what was life like before Assad fell? And what are you hearing now? What are you seeing now as what has happened there? And how do you feel about it?
If we wanna talk about the regime, we're gonna go back in time to 1970.
Oh yes, of course.
At that time, Hafez al-Assad, the father of Bashar al-Assad, took the lead in Syria and became the president. And we start, like in Syria, they start like a new age, or I don't know if there's enough word to describe this regime, but for me, if I say it's like a dictatorship, it's not enough. Like criminal, not enough. I don't know, but how to. They take control of everything, the power, and they. Most of the time, we live like peacefully. If you are with the regime and you agree what they do, mm-hmm. you will survive, mm-hmm. like with the minimum. Yeah. Otherwise, no, you're gonna go to jail. Maybe they will kill you in a way or another. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So no freedom, no dignity, no power for people, and the period since 1980 until 85 until 1990, they fight with many groups in Syria, even like many parties. Mm-hmm. Yeah. At that time, they are the opposite of the regime, and they destroyed a full city in Hama. And put people in jail, and other they killed them or yeah. they displaced them outside Syria. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's just kind of calm period. No democracy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When the president period finished, they will just automatically renew it with 99.9% succeed.
Yes.
Even if you go to vote or not, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and this is the situation until 2000, when he died, which is unbelievable at that time for us. Yeah, but he managed.
Did you feel at that time that things might change for the better?
We hoped that for maybe a couple of days. We celebrate with silence because, you know. Yeah, I can remember at that moment, I went to wake up my brother and tell him Hafez al-Assad died. And he can't believe he just waked up and we start dancing. Yeah, and celebrating. But it lasts for maybe a day or 2 days because Hafez al-Assad, before he died, he managed to arrange everything to his son to come and take the lead after him with many, many groups close to him. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it took them just maybe a week or two and everything done. Yeah. And we got this guy. At the first time, at the beginning of his presidency, he promised a lot, and maybe some people, okay, let's give him a chance. Maybe he he's young, and he was studying in the Great Britain at that time. Yeah, he wasn't maybe ready enough for that, but they managed to get him. Mm-hmm. Yeah, starting in 2005, I think, in Syria, many people start to talk, and they feel something new must happen.
Although there was hope for a time that things would change under Bashar al-Assad, the dictator continued to rule as his father did, with an iron fist. But during the Arab Spring in 2010 that saw several regimes fall, for many in Syria, what followed wasn't a civil war, but more of a revolution.
When the revolution starts in the Arab country, and by the way, civil war, it need more study to classify what happened in Syria. Maybe many people in Syria don't agree with this name, a civil war. It's not civil war. They think it was revolution against this regime. Yeah, and people asked at the beginning for freedom and dignity. And from the first day March 15 or March 15, March 18, he started to shoot people on the street. People lost protesting peacefully, asking for freedom for about maybe 8 months peacefully. But they made everything very hard. They kill people on the street, they shoot people, they go to houses, take people, destroy everything in the house, and they rape women in front of their husbands or in front of their children, and they took people to jail, tortured them until death. Yeah, and that make it very, very hard. I think anyone at that situation want to protect himself, protect his family, so that, make sense. You're going to do anything to protect yourself and your family from these monsters. Yeah, and it start to be like armed people, armed group, and try to fight back.
When did you know it was time to leave, right? So civil war, revolution is starting, because this was also, you had other countries who were also revolting against their governments. So, as this is all happening and you start seeing, more and more conflict coming, when did you know that it was time to leave?
Basically, most of people realized that in 2012, like almost after a year. Like, for example, my brother-in-law, Tamam, he tried to fled the country in
2014
for him, but many people, because like at that time, in 2012, 2013, many people displaced already, mm-hmm. and they destroyed their homes and their cities, and they just fled the country to Turkey or Lebanon or like to the sea, wherever they can reach. Yeah, but we realize that it's kind of a very, very tough situation for people, but you don't have any choice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so for him, he just go to Algeria and cross the border to Libya and cross the Mediterranean Sea to reach Italy, and then cross to reach Germany.
Germany.
He lost there for maybe 4 months or some, but he decided, no, I'm gonna go back, and he came back.
So Tamam, you left, you tried to leave early when all of this is starting, but you ended up going back.
That's right.
So tell me about that experience, trying to get across the Med to Europe.
Yeah, well, it was August 2014 when I had a group of my friends looking for a way to escape the country.
Tamam is Suher's brother, who also resettled in Canada in Saskatchewan and married a Canadian.
And we, back at the time, we had two ways to do that. One of them to go south to Turkey, then you go, north to Turkey, then you go to Greece, then you are in the UN right now and you can apply for a refugee statement. The other road, we go west towards Morocco, then Algeria, then Libya, then the Mediterranean, then you use the boat. You know the boat. I'm sure you have seen some of them. Yeah, using these boats to just across the sea to reach Italy. And when you arrive in Italy, then you can use the trains or anything. The borders are not formal borders anymore in Europe, so you can easily move between the countries. My destination was Denmark, to go to the Denmark, but I couldn't make it because I ran out of money and I ran out of energy, so I chose Germany instead. Back at the time, 2014, Germany was suffering from a huge number of refugees, coming from three countries. Syria was one of them. We still have Afghanistan and we still have Iraq. Mm-hmm. And these three nationalities were arriving to Germany in a very, very big numbers. Yeah. So I assume the government in Germany was not completely ready for these numbers. Yeah. We are speaking about millions arriving in the same times. So the government there had to deal with millions in a very short period of time, which is impossible. Yeah. So that was the reason that our condition back in Germany was not that perfect. Mm-hmm. For example, we get stored in camps for a long period of time. We ran out of money and we did not have any financial help from the government because they were just studying our papers. Mm-hmm. And they used to investigate us because the situation in Syria was mixed up by ISIS, Al-Nusra organization, which is ironically, it is ruling right now. Yeah. There is ISIS, Al-Nusra organization. There was a free army, the opposition for the ruling regime, and there is the ruling regime army itself. So you have four forbidden like institutions. If you want to be a refugee, you're supposed to be free of four of them, which is very hard for us to prove and for them to investigate, right?
Yeah.
So that was the reason that, honestly, we suffered. We suffered a lot in Germany.
So just so I'm clear, and our listeners understand, so you had to prove that you weren't part of these four groups, these four, you know, paramilitary groups, for them to say, okay, you can come in, we'll give you papers, you can have a job. Mm-hmm. So it was basically taking quite a long, was this months, year that it took to go through all of this?
Supposed to take from 3 to 4 months for you to have your residency there as a refugee. In my situation, it lasted more than a year for the people who were with me. For me, I decided to go back when I reached the 4 months there. I decided to cancel my refugee statement and go back to Syria for my own reasons. One of them, my psychological and physical situation there was not that good. Mm-hmm. And I don't blame the government of Germany. They were doing a great job. But honestly, they got millions of refugees all at once. That's why they were confused, and they didn't have the ability to care individually with people. So we have this group in this camp. They are 200. We will look in their paper later. We have some kind of emergency right now. Mm-hmm. And yes, if you are ISIS, you are not welcome anywhere.
Yeah.
If you are a ruling regime leader, you are not welcome anywhere. If you served in the ruling regime army with, for example, like chemical weapons department, you are not welcome anywhere, right? For charges against the ruling regime. So you have to prove that you are not part of the jihadist kind of fighters in Syria. So that was hard for us to prove. For my situation, it's easy because in Syria, there is a law. If you are the lonely boy in the family, you are not required to do the military service. Oh. Yes, you will be executed. Oh. Yeah, I didn't have to do my military service.
Okay.
My, like, Orwa did for two years and a half. I didn't.
Okay.
I didn't have to because I'm the lonely boy in my family. Yes, because there is a possibility for you to be killed.
Yeah.
And your family doesn't have any other boy there, so they will leave you for your parents. Yeah.
Okay.
But back to Germany, yes, you have to prove that you are not part of this. After that, they will give you a residency, and I think Germany like welcomed millions of Syrians, and they are living in a very good conditions right now. But in 2014, it was the peak of like the number of refugees reaching Germany from three different states.
So when did you go back to Syria?
It was January 2015.
In January 2015, Syria was engulfed in full-scale war. Syrian warplanes, along with Russian fighter jets, were pounding rebel positions all over the country. Ground support from Hezbollah, Russia, and other proxies in the region were also in Syria trying to fight back the rebels. At the time, things were getting desperate for civilians. Suher and Orwa had two young daughters at home. Very little money was coming in due to the war. The cost of medicine Suher needed had increased tenfold. Milk and food for their young children was becoming increasingly scarce. That's when they began planning their escape, to make it to Lebanon and then to Canada with the help of a sponsor in Prince George. But that decision didn't come easy. Leaving your homeland never is. Especially for Suher, who would be leaving her parents behind.
It was very, very hard time, and I can't believe I left my parents. It was very hard until now, when I thinking for this point, I can't believe that. We are from a very, very, the relationship in our country very, very close. We loved each other, and we close with my dad and with my mom. And when I remember this point, I cried. I can't. But at that time, when I have two daughters, and my husband, he get $20, I think, for all the month, yeah, I think that about
the same.
Yeah, same, yeah.
Yeah,
and we have, Two daughters, and both needed milk, needed anything for the kids, you know, food or, when the civil war starting, I was pregnant for my oldest, and she, all the war, she can remember, Tala, she can remember now. Something happened when she was 3 years and a half, or 4 years and a half. And Farah, she came after 2014, Farah. And we stuck in this point, especially I have an health situation. I need a medicine every day for this part. And it was 400 lira suri. Lira Suri before the war. And when the war is starting, my medicine, more than $20. Yeah, more than $20, because from Germany, it came from Germany. Yeah, we can't. And my family helped us. I remember my dad and my mom and my brother all together. And after that, my brother-in-law, he's in Smithers. Okay. Yeah, Talat, his name Talat. He and my sister, he both called us. Do you think anybody from this home, do you think needed to go see my refugees? And although he heard this idea, and he asked my dad before, do you want to go see my refugees? And he said, no, I stuck in Syria. I lived here. I want to die in Syria. No refugees for me, my dad said. Mm-hmm. And after that, he had this idea. I want to go refugees because he's thinking about daughters. We have two young daughters. And he asked me, do you want to go? This moment, I can't forget this thing. Yeah, it was very hard. I take a look with my dad, and he said, yes, you want to go. That's it. And I said yes. And after 2 years, Talat, he works a lot about the paper. Paperwork, yeah. For the application, refugees.
Yeah.
He works a lot, more than 6 months, I think, to do that. And when he gets done, we talked 2 years, I think, to came.
Almost 2 years of processing through the Canadian embassy in Lebanon, Beirut.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and we had to go three times to for like interview and medication test and these things.
Yeah, in Beirut.
So you had to go from Syria up to Beirut.
To Lebanon. Beirut,
to Lebanon.
Because the Canadian embassy in Syria, since like the beginning, before 2012, they're just gone.
Yeah. So you went to the Canadian embassy in Lebanon, in Beirut.
But after that, we stuck in Syria because hard many things happened. We discussed to live in Lebanese. We lived there.
I tried, but...
We lived about 2 months, 3 months, or more than that.
But their economic situation hasn't been good for
a very tough situation. So like we prefer to stay in Syria better than...
Yeah. After that.
Because I couldn't find a work and...
Yeah.
Like...
Too many
it
things.
It was not good. Lebanon at that time, not good for Syrian refugees. No.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when came here, we land in Prince George, the first place. And at that time, I saw very nice people. I don't forget all the faces I saw, and warm hug. Directly, I'm thinking about our government, and I left my country because I don't have money for my medicine. I don't have money for my daughters, for milk or anything they needed. And I cried a lot because this part, it's very hard. I left my mom. Mm-hmm. I left my dad. You can't believe what all Syrian people thinking when came to him as refugees. Yeah. No language, no anything. But all Canadian I saw at that time very, very nice. Until this time, I think Canada, we love Canada, and now we are Canadian. We have a citizenship, and they helped us. And when we arrived at the home, what the name for Dorothy and Benita and the group?
She meant for the group of five women. They sponsored us from Prince George.
Yeah.
And you can't believe it prepared everything. Toys for the kids, blanket, a new carpet, everything you're thinking about needed, I found there. And milk. Milk for my daughter. Oh, that's hard, yeah?
You can't imagine that. Sorry for the interruption, but you can't imagine because maybe you lived your whole life here. And these basic things, it's like you don't think about it. You don't think about like food or like electricity or a car or these basic things.
Or clothes
but
for kids.
In Syria, it's like to get milk for your kids at that time, it's a dream.
And this is where we come to now, right? We heard lots about, you know, Syrian refugees, the situation in Europe that's still ongoing. But we heard lots about this, and then we haven't, you know, you haven't really heard much for years. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, within a few months, not even a couple of months, it's like he's gone.
Yeah.
He's in Russia, you know, and you see like the jubilation, the celebrations happening in Syria. But you also have this question now of all these other groups because they're still there. And so now the big question is, you know, what happens next? And we've seen, you know, places like Iraq and Afghanistan and these other places that have, you know, not been able to regain stability. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of what I've read about or, you know, heard about is that Syria might be a little different. You know, out of all of the Middle East, there's the highest, you know, education rate. The politicians, a lot of the politicians and a lot of the, you know, the leaders of the country, not the regime, but the leaders are well educated. Yeah. And so there's hope. There's a lot more hope for the future of Syria rather than some of these other countries that didn't have that. So I guess, you know, the question now is now that we're here, what was going, you know, you mentioned the first time when Assad's father died, the celebration, the dancing. What happened this time? What was the first thing that came to mind when you heard the news that Assad had left?
It was, for me, unbelievable. Because at like the last few years, like 3-4 years, everything like died. Like I look at pictures of the people, the faces, the streets, the trees, like everything looks dead. So it's kind of dead country with everything. But as you mentioned, like in just 11 days the regime down. So it's unbelievable. Now you see the people, they are very happy, they are dancing, they are celebrating. Yeah, it's amazing. It's unbelievable moment for us. Yeah. It's not easy to get rid of this nightmare. And even it's for good thing, not just for the Syrian, for Lebanon, for Iraq, for anyone on the planet. Because it's kind of like devil or I can't find good words to describe this regime. If you see the news or follow like some pages or news, you're gonna see lots of bad things happen there. Yeah. like hundreds of thousands of people got killed. Hundreds of thousands of people in a mass graves now. Many of them like just tortured to death. It's like Sednaya prison. It's the new Bastille, if you know what I mean, like mm-hmm. that. Like the Bastille prison in the France revolutions. Yeah, it was like a big symbol for them. It's, I believe, it's nothing comparing to this one. It's nothing.
So what are you hearing now? Do you still have family in Syria?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. All our family is still there, yeah.
And so what are you, have you heard from them? What are you hearing from them?
Yeah, all like that. They are so happy. And you know what? At least whatever coming in the future, it's gonna be like better than before. So this is the best thing. But as you said, like Syria is different from Afghanistan or Iraq or other, or even Libya or, yeah. And by the way, like the regime fell down with all his groups. Mm-hmm. So I don't think there is like reverse revolutions. As you know, like what happened in Egypt, like a few years ago, when the revolution successful against Hosni Mubarak, and then the Islamic took the lead with democracy, like totally democracy, but later they just, take down the military.
Yeah.
But in Syria, what makes Hafez al-Assad and Bashar al-Assad last for all these time, or the period of time, because they are brutal and depends on their desire for power, and then supported by the military in Syria and the intelligence, all these groups. And now they have just disappeared. So who's gonna make this revolution again? No one, I think.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's for good for the Syrian, I believe.
Rebel groups that overthrew the Assad regime, led by the largest group, HTS, as they're known, have appointed a provisional government to oversee the new transitional government that will hopefully take over Syria in the coming year following elections. Although HTS has a background in Islamic ideology, it would seem many Syrians are hopeful they will support a more secular government to reestablish stability for all Syrians. Just yesterday, the provisional government appointed Mehsa Sabrin as the first woman to lead the Syrian central bank, a promising sign.
The first signs, good, yeah. I think until now, the first signs is, good. The country goes to good situation. The first signs, yeah. They worked good. When he talked, Ahmed Ashara, when he talked, with BBC or CNN, all the Syrian people liked what he talked or speak about.
Yeah, maybe it is like pragmatic movement. We're gonna see later, but I don't think that the situation is ready to them to take it that bad side. Even like for the people inside Syria and even for the country around Syria and on the world, no one can accept that. So this situation, I think, it's gonna help. And if you notice that, what happened in Iraq or in Libya, that doesn't happen in Syria.
You can't compare.
At the first, like a few days, we are scared if people get, like to get revenge from others and like make many massacre or, nothing happened like that. There's some small thing here or there, but it's not to worry about. This is the good thing, like in one night, like no regime at all, and do whatever you want, and people keep calm and like think about the future and these things. That's good. That's good.
Exciting.
Tamam,
I want to ask you again. You've already had the experience of leaving and going back. What do you think about it now? Obviously, you know, you're Canadian citizens. You know, you've put down roots here in Canada, and in Saskatchewan. Do you feel or have hope to go and visit, to go back, to see family? Is that kind of what you're hoping and looking forward to, possibly?
Yeah, for sure. In the past, I had worries to go visit because I supported the revolution, the last one, because we have two waves of revolution, and I support both of them. The second revolution happened this year in my city, as Sueda, named as Sueda. I supported it, I posted and I wrote articles, and also I supported financially with my friends in Europe, because they need transportation and signs and the stuff like this. So, and that's not a secret. So I was pretty sure that the ruling regime knows about that. Mm-hmm. And if I visited, they will arrest me at the border again. So I was not visiting for 3 years. I have been in Canada for 3 years and I've never visited even once. Yeah. The night Bashar al-Assad get overthrown, I opened my laptop looking for a ticket to go to Damascus in the same night. And I have a friend from Europe. He's already in Syria right now, and he was a similar situation of me. I don't think of living there for my like special social situation. I'm married to a Canadian lady.
Oh, okay.
Yes, her name is Sheila Price, and Saskatchewan is her homeland.
Yeah.
She doesn't speak Arabic, any Arabic. So taking her to Syria, she would suffer a lot from, like, you know, it's not just socializing, it's working and stuff like this, right? So obviously, it's Canada is better for our family, new family. And actually, I want to mention about the positive thing about Canada. I am impressed with your educational system here in Syria, because I used to be a teacher and I know the educational system in Syria, and I know the Canadian one, and actually I have a huge bias towards the Canadian one. I like to for Syrian people to teach the kids in the school how to accept the difference, how to accept different people, right? And actually I've witnessed that in the school, and I taught that myself, how to accept the difference. We don't have that in Syria, to be honest. Like, we still polarizing among the ethno and religious lines, and that's not acceptable at all. Mm. And here's where my worries about the future comes from, because I doubt this government who took the authority over al-Assad to be like going towards democracy. Because, yes, we did not forget they came from al-Jihadi background, right? Mm-hmm. Until now, they formed a temporary government in Syria, and all of them are Muslims. So there is no Christian minister between them. There is no al-Druzi minister. There is no Alawi minister. So here's a big question. I know it's a temporary government, but also it contains the signs for the future.
Yeah.
I don't see good signs, to be honest. That's why I'm a little bit more worried than Orwans were. To be objective, I liked how smooth the transition was. I was expecting a huge civil war in there when Assad falls, but that did not happen, which is perfect because they are organized and they know what they are doing. But 4 years ago, their name was Al-Nusra Organization, you know, forbidden, illegal, terrorist organization. And now you are ruling a country of many ethnic subgroups. That's a huge shock, I think. So seriously, we need to trust them. We love to see new faces, but we are not sure that we are going towards democracy.
Yeah. So it's, you know, cautiously optimistic to see what happens next.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. If there's anything that stands out, or your hope for the future in general, you know, it seems like, you know, again, you've come halfway around the world. And as I mentioned, you know, earlier, my grandparents went through this, and I'm a product of refugees, yes. You know, of refugee grandparents. And, you know, I have a big family. We had a big family, and everyone is doing well. And they, you know, my grandparents leaving the country, leaving their homeland, started all of that. And I see the same thing here. You know, you've gone through a lot and a lot of emotion and struggle, but you're here now and life looks and feels pretty good. And I just wonder, you've gone through all of this. What's your hope for other members of your family or your friends who are still there, who are still trying and hoping to see a democracy and a free country in Syria?
Yeah, I will say my only dream is a secularist country, which is like, it's a same distance from everyone. Like, because the fact is, the state doesn't have a religion. Individuals have a religion. So, in the other hand, a country has a constitution. Mm-hmm. You know, that's how you run a country, by a constitution. So, I know Syria won't be a secularist country that soon, but maybe half, maybe, yeah, because it can't be like we can't accept another Islamic dictatorship mm-hmm. after Al-Assad. Syrian people won't handle that. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they won't handle that. If that happened, I'm sure my city, which Al-Druzi ethnic people, will be a state by itself. Mm-hmm. It will separate and it will be a state by itself because it can't handle them. Mm-hmm. Same of Christian cities, for example. We have a city called Aleppo, where the half of it is a Christian. So how you will run, like, rule these people depending on the Quran? Yeah. That doesn't match with their beliefs. Mm-hmm. You know, they have mm-hmm. Bible. If they want to be religious, yeah. They have Bible to follow, not Al-Quran. Yeah. So that doesn't make sense. The state should be unreligious, and the constitution is the main thing we should be looking for. The new president, the temporary president of Syria, Ahmed Sharra, said like lately he will invite for a national conference to discuss the institution, and according to the constitution, he will start forming a new government and will like run the big institution in the country. Mm-hmm. So we are looking for that. In the same time, we don't want them to establish their dictatorship in this like temporary period. Yeah. Right. So here's our worries coming from. I wish for my friends and my families and the Syrian society, all of that, to try democracy, real democracy, just once in their life, because we never tried it. Yeah. We never tried it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's my wishes.
You have, and I'm assuming, are your parents?
Sorry?
Are your parents still
yeah.
in Syria?
Yeah.
So what's your hope for the future of Syria?
Oh, yeah. I hope all the people catch the peace. Yeah, I hope that, because we are worried a lot. 7 years ago, I had bad health because the doctor said you are worried about your family in Syria.
Yeah.
All the time you worry because that your health. Yeah, I have an issue a lot. Yeah, you can because we have on 2018 Daesh. Do you remember
ISIS?
ISIS came.
Attacked Sweden
and. It's okay, 2 days and ISIS left from our city, but you can't imagine that. My family there, all our friends, all my communities there. How I can live here normal? How I can't thinking all the time about our family and our city and our country too. And I hope catch the bees and I sleep good.
Yeah,
no yeah, yeah.
No
all the people get freedom there.
Orwa, you already kind of said it, but you know, what's your hope? Are you hoping that you'll get to visit Syria at some point in the future?
Yeah, for sure. I will. Now I will. I have been for like 7 years now. Yeah. And they know I never think about go back. But now it's okay. It's okay. Yeah. So, yeah, I will one day. I don't know when, but yeah. I'm excited now, but I can't go now. So, yeah.
My daughters, yeah, too.
As they said, I'm not going to add many things about what Tamam or Suhair said. We wish to be like a free, independent country and people all equal, like against the law. And they live like with peaceful, and and democracy, sharing the country for everyone.
That was Orwa Garzal al-Laldin, his wife Suher al-Shufi, and her brother Tamam al-Shufi. You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or check us out on the web at smithersradio.com. CICK News has been made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to my colleague Pam Hassan and all of our roving journalists, I'm Daniel Messick. Thanks for listening.
Learn more about CICK. Visit us at smithersradio.com. Yeah, .com.